what we have are politicians who are beholden to the fossil fuel industry for campaign contributions. What we need are leaders.
Protesters rally to demand more action from Senator Murkowski on climate change. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, February 18th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, soldiers from as far away as Mongolia and Australia gather near Fairbanks to hone their Arctic skills.
Military forces across the world are going to have to be able to adapt and react to these colder regions.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Condor Airlines, with nonstop service from Ted Stevens International Airport to Germany and beyond. More information available on condor.com. Condor, born to fly. And by Alaska Premier Dental Group, providing full-service dental care for the entire family with three offices, two in Anchorage and one in Wasilla. Service information at smilealaska.com.
President Barack Obama has stopped in Alaska to refuel, but he plans to make his first real trip to the state in August, or so says U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski. She let it slip during her annual address to the Alaska legislature today. APRN's Liz Ruskin reports the speech was aimed primarily at fighting the administration's moves to shield parts of the Arctic from oil development.
Murkowski says she's not normally an alarmist, but she says President Obama's actions in the Arctic show he's trying to starve the Trans-Alaska pipeline of new oil.
I just can't come to a different conclusion. It looks like the goal is to shut down the pipeline. Now, they're not saying that, but when you're working against those initiatives that would allow us to fill it up, how can you conclude otherwise?
And Murkowski says if the pipeline is done and dismantled, the effect on the state would be huge.
Really, the Alaska that we know, I don't think it exists anymore. That's not a future that I'm prepared for. And I don't think that that's a future that any of us want.
Murkowski gave her annual address to the Alaska legislature as a rallying cry, to the extent that her deliberative personal style allows. She urged Alaska leaders to storm the ramparts, politically anyway. She recited the issues that have inflamed Alaska's leaders for weeks: Obama's request for wilderness designation in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, a decision to withdraw offshore areas from Arctic leasing, and restrictions in the National Petroleum Reserve, Alaska. Legislators applauded an idea she floated to put part of ANWR under state ownership. Congress has been unable to pass a bill to open the coastal plain to drilling. Murkowski didn't explain why a land trade or sale would be any more popular, but she vowed to fight at every legislative opportunity.
Truly, folks, every must-pass bill, every open amendment process, every chance that we have to leverage something for Alaska, know that I'm going to be keying in on each and every one of them.
This year, Murkowski became chairman of the Senate Appropriations Panel that controls the Interior Department's spending. She stopped short of saying she'd seek fiscal revenge on the administration, though she says she has new tools to use, and some are pretty sharp. Afterward, Representative Les Guerra, an Anchorage Democrat, called Murkowski's speech half good. Guerra says more drilling doesn't necessarily mean good revenue flow for Alaska.
Oil production involves two things. One, the drilling, and our delegation is pounding their fists on that, and that's fine. And one is whether we get any money for it. Right now, unless they change the law, we get none of the federal royalty for outer continental shelf oil. We get no state tax for outer continental shelf oil. We get nothing. Other side benefits, but no revenue.
Guerra says under the state's tax system, developing ANWR wouldn't solve Alaska's revenue crunch either. In Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
Senator Murkowski barely talked about climate change in her annual speech to the Alaska legislature today. And outside the Capitol, a small group rallied to bring attention to climate change and to demand more action on the issue from Murkowski. KTOO's Casey Kelly reports.
About 25 people gathered on the sidewalk across the street from the Capitol, waving signs saying, "We need leadership," and "Budget crisis, climate crisis." Rally organizer Danielle Redman says Lisa Murkowski's recent votes for the Keystone XL pipeline and against stricter Environmental Protection Agency emissions regulations show she doesn't take climate change seriously.
What we have are politicians who are beholden to the fossil fuel industry for campaign contributions. What we need are leaders who will craft policy for a vibrant future.
Redman works for the Southeast Alaska Conservation Council and recently helped start the Alaska Climate Action Network, or Alaska CAN. Now that Murkowski chairs the Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee, Redman says she's in good position to help the U.S. curb emissions. She says it's important to Alaska's future that oil production not be the primary driver of the state's economy.
Alaska is facing a $3.5 billion budget deficit. It's clear that it's time to have some very serious, if uncomfortable, conversations about the future of Alaska and our relationship with the fossil fuel industries.
June Degnan lives in Juneau, but is Yupik, and her family roots are in Unalakleet. She says climate change is being felt especially hard in rural communities. Degnan says Murkowski needs to acknowledge that climate change is real and begin to do something about it.
She needs to get with the program to see and look at the scientific aspect of it and the boots on the ground aspect of it and what's happening.
Scientists almost universally agree that humans are the primary cause of climate change. Talking to reporters after her speech to the legislature, Murkowski reiterated that there's no doubt climate change is real, but she took a more ambiguous stance on the cause.
It's not my position to argue how much human beings contribute to it.
The senator says humans have a responsibility to address the impact emissions have on climate, but it doesn't make sense to put in place policies that will ruin the economy. Back at the rally, protesters drop pennies into a glass jar to symbolize giving their 2 cents on the cause of climate change. Redman says she did not ask for a meeting with Murkowski, who didn't make an appearance, but she's happy with the turnout. She says awareness about climate change is growing in Alaska.
We're on the front lines. We feel the impact, but making change is really daunting.
Redman thinks as the movement continues to grow, politicians will begin to take notice. In Juneau, I'm Casey Kelly.
As Shell tries to chart a course back to the Arctic this summer, the company is looking for space to store its drill rigs in Unalaska. Shell has asked the Department of Natural Resources to sign off on 3 moorage sites for the Noble Discoverer and the Polar Pioneer, all on state-owned tidelands. If they're approved, the rigs could cycle through until 2019. Shell didn't respond to requests for comment, but port personnel in Unalaska say some of the spots are less than ideal. Summer brings heavy traffic from cargo ships, tugboats, and barges. Marine pilot Rick Entenman says the 500-meter safety zone that Shell is requesting around its rigs may not leave much space if they anchored in Nantican Bay as proposed.
So we'd like to maybe move that position, maybe tweak that a little bit more towards the Broad Bay area, between Broad Bay and maybe Wide Bay, get him out of the way. Because it's going to be a visual, too. All these things here are going to be, what the heck's going on, you know? I mean, how long is that going to be there?
It's not clear how long the vessels would stay in Unalaska. Shell didn't intend to keep either of its Arctic rigs in port back in 2012, but heavy sea ice and permitting delays kept the fleet tied up in Unalaska for more than a month. During that time, the Noble Discoverer broke free from its moorage in Unalaska Bay, grabbing national headlines in the process. Shell isn't looking to use that spot again, but after the issues the company faced on its last Arctic expedition, Shell sent several employees to Unalaska to hammer out new plans. Ports Director Peggy McLaughlin was part of the meeting just over a year ago.
You know, I think that Shell made the effort to come out and communicate and to work with local government, work with local industry to come up with the best possible solutions. Somehow in the mix-up and the time lapse between then and now, some of those priorities have maybe been lost in the translation.
McLaughlin says there's also been turnover in Shell's ranks. She's asked representatives from the company for another meeting to talk about parking sites. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, taking on the issue of pay inequity for women.
If we want to have a labor force that stays here, then being 48th in the nation for pay is not a good attractor.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Northern Air Cargo, providing year-round transportation of all types of freight, from vehicles and oversized equipment to small packages for corporations or small business. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956. Artist, show us how you inspire Alaska. Apply now for an individual artist award. The deadline is March the 1st. Learn more at rasmussen.org/IAA. This message sponsored by Rasmussen Foundation.
The U.S. Army in Alaska held its first ever international conference last week on cold weather combat. Elite specialists in mountaineering, skiing, and Arctic survival came to the Northern Warfare Training Center near Fairbanks to learn new techniques for fighting in terrain that can itself be a weapon against troops. As KSKA's Zachariah Hughes reports, the conference comes as the Army is putting its focus on the Pacific and the Arctic.
It's 10 to 20 degrees below, depending on who you ask, at the Black Rapids training site, and Chief Warrant Officer Ramel Hurtado is striking his knife to spark a fire in a pile of twigs he gathered.
It's a very tedious process. You know, nature provides.
Hurtado is at Black Rapids for an Army course in Arctic survival. Usually this camp, an hour south of Delta Junction, is used for training troops stationed in Alaska on how to operate in cold terrain. But this week, specialists from 12 countries paid their way from as far away as Nepal for a summit on Arctic and mountain warfare. As international attention drifts further north, the Defense Department is leaning more on its military assets in Alaska. Lieutenant Colonel Alan Brown is a public information officer for the Army.
We recognize that cold regions are pretty significant right now and becoming more significant. You know, the Arctic is only going to become more relevant. So military forces across the world are going to have to be able to adapt and react to these colder regions.
Snowshoeing up a hill in a thin white tunic, Lieutenant Colonel Francois Dufault watches soldiers and specialists ski by. Dufault is from the Advanced Warfare Center in Canada and says he's studying the particulars of how his colleagues do many of the same things, only different.
I think the most important thing that we're looking at when we go outside like this is how you get dressed, because in the Arctic, you know, the big point is the layer system, and either you will freeze or you'll be overeating.
Not everything was so hands-on, though. Delegates spent a lot of time just explaining to each other details about their country's cold weather military capabilities. Denmark became interested in its Arctic areas just 3 years ago and is trying to integrate the unique abilities of its home guard in Greenland, some of whom spend months patrolling the remote coasts by dog sled. The Germans boast a mountain facility where specialists can take courses in high-altitude sniper shooting. Dorjniam Shinbeor is head of the Mongolian Army's Special Task Battalion. He says his military is drawing on nomadic traditions for carrying artillery and supplies.
Yeah, we're using the horse and yaks and camel. Yeah.
Some of the specialists came from countries without an obvious connection to the cold. Lieutenant Colonel Matt Rogerson oversees Australia's rescue operations for Antarctica, as well as the rarely mentioned Australian Alps. He says Arctic readiness is essential for the kinds of international conflicts drawing warm weather troops to cooler climates.
The Australian Army continues to have a global mission promoting peace. And so in particular with our US partners, that's taken us to some pretty cold places, be that Korea or more recently Afghanistan. And so who knows where that next location might be. But we want to be well prepared for that.
Going forward, military leaders want a better sense of who knows the most when it comes to cold weather. Sergeant Adam McQuiston spent part of January training with the Finnish Army, who practically wrote the book on Arctic warfare. McQuiston is helping bring what he learned with the elite Jaeger Brigade into the U.S. Army's own training. Lessons like how to build a fire on top of a hill after submerging in ice water, part of his coursework, and some training that is really only available in Finland.
They did a reindeer slaughter. One of the gentlemen brought live reindeer in, and we ended up field dressing them and ended up cooking them that night.
But the Defense Department is sending mixed signals. The national troop drawdown could hit Alaska's two Army bases hard, with more than 11,000 positions potentially cut. Officials are visiting next week to see Forts Richardson and Wainwright for themselves and to hear from community members. Yet the head of the Army, General Ray Odierno, flew into Black Rapids aboard a Black Hawk helicopter for a quick lunch with troops and then to give a brief address on where collaborative efforts building Arctic capacity fit into the Army's overall strategy.
As I look at the new environment that we're operating in around the world, in order to solve these many problems that are popping up, it's going to require a joint interagency multinational solution.
One auspicious absence at the event was Russia, who the U.S. military is barred from working with because of sanctions over the conflict in Ukraine. However, specialists say that their interests in preparing for cold weather combat have less to do with any one particular geopolitical hotspot than building a long-term ability to operate effectively in an area garnering more and more attention from travelers, companies, and countries. In Black Rapids, I'm Zachariah Hughes.
Almost 21,000 Alaskans signed up for health insurance on healthcare.gov during the open enrollment period that closed February 15th. Susan Johnson announced the numbers at a press conference in Anchorage today. She's the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Director for Region 10, which also includes Idaho, Washington, and Oregon. Johnson says Alaska's increase of 62% over last year leads the region.
The Alaska numbers are incredibly strong. They're over about 162% of last year's numbers in half the time. We just had 3 months this year. We had 6 months last year. So that's huge.
Nationally, enrollment increased 41%. Nearly 90% of Alaskans who enrolled qualified for a subsidy to help pay for it. The average subsidy was more than $500 per month. Johnson says she is hopeful state lawmakers will decide to expand Medicaid, which would offer health coverage to thousands more Alaskans. The federal government funds the program at 100% until the end of next year. Then the state share gradually increases to 10% in 2020. Republican lawmakers in Alaska have said the state shouldn't expand Medicaid because the federal government will abandon that generous funding commitment. Johnson calls that argument a false asteroid.
You know, I'm used to politicians thinking that federal dollars have sort of third grade cooties attached to them. And I got over that in sixth grade. And I think that we can get over it to see that it's really about those people who are suffering and could die and need our help now. It's a trust in that need, not a trust in the federal government.
It would take an act of Congress to amend the Affordable Care Act to reduce the federal match rate for Medicaid expansion.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. If you're ready to quit tobacco, Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line can help with free confidential coaching and support services through the telephone and online. Now introducing Text to Quit, a way to help you use medications correctly, manage urges, and prevent relapse all from your mobile phone. Call 1-800-QUIT now or visit alaskaquitline.com for more information. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Prevention and Control Program.
Alaska Pacific University now offers the APU Promise Tuition Grant, a program designed to significantly minimize or eliminate out-of-pocket tuition expenses for Pell-eligible students. More at 1-800-272-7528. This message is sponsored by APU.
Governor Bill Walker has sent his final amendments to the capital and operating budget to the legislature. The governor partially restored funding for community jails. While Walker had initially cut the program entirely, the amended budget includes $7 million for their operation. The budget also shuffles $6 million in highway funding to the ferry system to cover already scheduled services. Walker also added a $9 million capital appropriation for homelessness programs, and he cut $20 million from Medicaid based on anticipated savings through expansion of the program. The changes also include a contingency provision that would allow the governor the discretion to transfer some funds between departments to mitigate the unexpected consequence of budget cutting. The net change from the last version of his budget is an increase of $350,000. Governor Bill Walker named his new rural affairs advisor yesterday at the Alaska Federation of Natives winter retreat in Kotzebue. Jared Godfrey's full title is Senior Advisor on Rural Business and Intergovernmental Affairs. a title that Godfrey says is meant to communicate that his work will focus on economic development in villages and consulting with tribes. Godfrey is an enrolled member of the Native Village of Port Lyons Tribe and has worked as a director of corporate affairs for Kodiak-based Afognak Native Corporation. Godfrey says he's excited to be part of a change in how the state of Alaska, tribes, and corporations interact.
That obviously is something that animates me, and I think animates a lot of people. If there's potential to create a more fruitful and relationship and a relationship that's reciprocally beneficial to both the state and the Alaska Native community and tribes.
Willie Hensley, a former state representative and senator who's been active in the Alaska Federation of Natives since its inception, says he's pleased with the governor's choice. Hensley says Godfrey is coming into the role at an important but difficult time.
But we've had 35 good years in which people have enjoyed, you know, a much improved life, many conveniences, many services, programs, facilities that were could hardly even be dreamed of in my youth. And now, of course, all of that is under jeopardy because of the nature of our economy and our dependence on oil. So he's going to have his hands full.
Godfrey will be based in Anchorage and is spending his first month on the job taking meetings and making contacts. He says he may convene a summit of Alaska Native stakeholders in the near future. The Anchorage YWCA has taken on the topic of pay inequity for women. Nationally, women make 77 cents for every dollar a man makes, but in Alaska, the rate is 67 cents, placing Alaska at 48th for women's pay in the nation. Hillary Morgan is the CEO of the Anchorage YWCA. She says when she researched the pay disparity, she thought it may be skewed due to jobs in the resource development industry that required more physical strength. So she examined industries that didn't require brawn.
And so I looked down the report and I thought, okay, lawyers, let's just look at lawyers where body part really is immaterial. You're just using your brain. And found that lawyers in Alaska, female lawyers in Alaska, make $20,000 less than their male counterparts. And I thought, well, that means something then. This is not just, you know, industries and the different kind of muscle force that you need.
It has nothing to do with a strong back.
Exactly, exactly. And so over the past year, you know, a couple of years, I've just been sort of doing little researches. Then the stars sort of aligned, and I had an economist come on board at the YWCA who is very well-versed in this stuff, and then also recommended to my board of directors that we really take a stand on this. And so the board voted back in May to eliminate the gender pay gap in Alaska by 2025.
The survey that you're undertaking with business folks, mm-hmm. what else are you trying to get at beyond just how much do you pay women compared to men? Mm-hmm. How are you working to understand what other dynamics might be at play
right.
that contributes to this problem?
Right. What our survey is going to do is going to determine which companies are gender neutral. And so the survey that we're designing, which is it's a survey that is going to create a list that is going to be a list of the best Alaskan companies for working women. And the survey will be used to superimpose over people's personnel policies as well as their wage policies. And the importance of the personnel policies is that there are many ways to keep women in the workforce if you want them to stay in the workforce. And there are lots of ways to exclude women from the workforce through personnel policies. There are simple ones like maternity leave, paternity leave. A lot of companies don't have leave for men.
It seems like you have to walk sort of a fine line with this type of outreach effort because some people may see it as, oh boy, here come the angry women.
Right.
How have you prepared for that? There's undoubtedly going to be some pushback, or people right. will say you're meddling in private businesses' dealings and you shouldn't do that. How have you thought about that and worked to address those concerns mm-hmm. that are going to be out there?
Well, for me, it's very simple. So I used to work on Wall Street, so I'm a numbers and a money person. And
And I lived in New York City for many years and in D.C. for many years. And our labor pool here is very small. And if you talk to any business in this state, finding good employees is one of the major conversations that they're having. So our demand for labor has increased, and 48% of our labor force are women. If we want to have a labor force that stays here and that is good and qualified, then being 48th in the nation for pay is not a good attractor.
A talk entitled Closing Alaska's Pay Gap, Alaska's Path to Equality will kick off a new speaker series at Alaska Pacific University in Anchorage tomorrow evening at 7 p.m. More information about the YWCA's Pay Equity Initiative is at our website, alaskapublic.org. A Fairbanks man is nearing completion of a mountaineering feat. Bill Cole has climbed the highest peaks on 6 of the world's 7 continents. KUAC's Dan Bross reports.
Bill Cole conquered the most remote of the so-called 7 summits last month, 16,000-foot Vincent Massif in Antarctica, despite a case of the flu that nearly scuttled the expedition.
So I had to dig deep, almost as deep as my checkbook, to succeed on that one.
Cole says the extreme expense of the trip played into his resolve to get up the mountain, an accomplishment that leaves only Africa's Mount Kilimanjaro to complete the 7 summits. The 55-year-old geotechnical engineer plans to climb the 20,000-foot Kilimanjaro with his wife this summer. Cole scaled the toughest of the 7 summits, North America's Denali, South America's Aconcagua, and Asia's Mount Everest 20 years ago.
Folks, were asking if I was doing the 7 summits. And I says, well, I think I may just make that my quest.
Cole admits he's had some luck with weather that enabled him to summit each of the peaks on his first attempt. He adds that nobody has died on any of the expeditions despite a fierce determination to succeed.
That state of mind where it's do or die. Sometimes that's dangerous, but that's the way I am. I can't change it.
Cole plans to continue mountaineering after he completes the 7 summits and has numerous peaks in Alaska, Canada, and the lower 48 in his sights. Bill Cole is giving a slideshow and talk tonight at the University of Alaska Fairbanks about his ascents of Antarctica's Mount Vinson and Indonesia's Karstens Pyramid. The presentation is at the Scheibel Auditorium at 7 p.m. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from Casey Kelly in Juneau, Lauren Rosenthal in Unalaska, Zachariah Hughes near Delta Junction, Jennifer Canfield in Kotzebue, and Dan Bross in Fairbanks. APRN's Alexander Gutierrez reported from Juneau and Liz Ruskin from Washington, D.C. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by Raven Alaska, connecting Alaskans across the state for more than 50 years. Find more at flyraven.com. And by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating jobs and business opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. The 2015 PFD filing season is here. If you have questions about your absences or someone you know away at college or serving in the military, the State of Alaska Department of Revenue encourages you to be proactive. Check out the absence guidelines before applying for your PFD. Visit pfd.alaska.gov and click on eligibility in the banner to learn more. The deadline to apply is March 31st. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska.
You can find APRN headlines and more online at alaskapublic.org. Local, national, and international news, upcoming events, and statewide community conversation. AlaskaPublic.org, connecting you to Alaska one story at a time.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.